Hi, this is the September 16, 2024 edition of Scholastic News for grades 5 and 6. I'm Chris Radio volunteer Karen Finnegan. On the front cover is a photo of a bunch of students in class, and the headline reads, "Should you speak up? Dealing with bullying can be hard. How do you know when to step in and when to get help?" Life skills. Should you stand up to bullying? As you read this, think about why is it important to students. As you read this, think about why is it important to support kids who are being bullied. Words to know. Taunting. Verb. Making fun of or challenging someone in an insulting way. Confront. Verb. To directly oppose or challenge someone. What is bullying? Here's how to tell the difference between bullying and drama, like disagreements between kids. Disagreeing is when two people express their opinions and no one feels unsafe. Everyone disagrees sometimes. Bullying isn't accidental. The person's words or actions are clearly meant to be hurtful. Bullying isn't a one-time thing. It's bad behavior that's usually repeated over a period of time. You hear a commotion in the cafeteria. The biggest kid in your school is picking on a new student. Some kids are ignoring the situation or nervously walking away. Others are filming it or taking photos with their phones. What are you doing? Unfortunately, scenes like this aren't uncommon. In a recent study by the U.S. Department of Education, about 1 out of 4 middle schoolers reported that they had been bullied at school. Judy French works for PACER's National Bullying Prevention Center, an organization that is trying to end bullying. She says it's important to support kids who are being pushed around, excluded, or hurt by others spreading rumors. "If it were happening to you, wouldn't you want someone to help?" French asks. "Even in difficult situations, there are things we can do. So how do you know when to stand up to bullying? And when is it better to not get directly involved?" On the next page, French weighs in about how to handle 2 bullying situations. Show support. At basketball practice, 2 of your teammates are taunting a new player, Maya. They're making fun of her sneakers and refusing to let her shoot with them. Speaking out against bullying takes courage, especially when more than one person is doing it. But since these are your teammates and the situation doesn't seem dangerous, you should support Maya. One way is to ignore your teammates' bad behavior and start shooting with Maya yourself. That will let your teammates know that you don't like how they're acting. More important, it will show Maya she's not alone and has someone on her side. You could also confront your teammates, but wait until after practice and do it in private. French explains that challenging them in front of a group could make the situation worse or cause them to turn on you. Having that talk out of the public eye is always safer, she says. Get help. Connor is the most popular kid in 6th grade. At recess, you see him push Brendan, who's in your 5th grade class. Connor warns Brendan that he'd better not snitch by telling a teacher. You should want to stand up for kids who are bullied, but confronting Connor yourself could put you in danger. In this situation, he holds the power. That doesn't always mean being big or strong. Power could come from being older or more popular or being part of a group. If someone is physically hurting another kid, find a trusted adult right away, French advises. In this case, that's the best way to support Brendan. French points out that telling an adult isn't snitching, which is done just to get someone in trouble. When it comes to bullying, alerting a teacher or parent is protecting someone from getting hurt. Plus, by leaving the scene, you're taking away part of Connor's audience. Some kids who bully are encouraged by others laughing or, even worse, posting photos or videos online. Just don't walk away assuming someone else is getting help. Your turn. How would you handle cyberbullying? How about a disagreement between friends? Go to sn56.scholastic.com to watch a video with 4 more sticky situations. Life science. Monarchs on the move. As you read, think about why has the number of monarch butterflies dropped? Words to know. Entomologist, noun, a scientist who studies insects. Climate change, noun, a gradual change in Earth's average temperature and weather patterns. There's a map on the top of page 5 showing the monarch migration. You can study the chart and then answer the questions and ask your parent, teacher, or guardian for help if you need it. One of the largest migrations on Earth is taking place right now, and it might be happening in your backyard. In mid-August, millions of monarch butterflies started flying south from the U.S. and Canada. Some will travel as far as 3,000 miles to reach forests in central Mexico. For several months, the fir trees in the butterfly's winter home will be blanketed in orange and black. Scientists are anxious to find out how many monarchs make the trip this year. Last winter, the number of monarchs in Mexico dropped nearly 60% from the year before. It's part of a trend that has seen the monarch population fall sharply over the past 30 years. Experts are concerned about the future of the butterflies. For almost any population of living organisms, there's a point of no return, says Karen Oberhauser. Words to know. Entomologist, noun, a scientist who studies insects. Climate change, noun, a gradual change in Earth's average temperature and weather patterns. Karen Oberhauser is an entomologist who has studied monarch butterflies for more than 30 years. Can we help save these colorful butterflies before it's too late? An epic journey. To escape cold winter temperatures, most monarchs in North America fly south to Mexico. The butterflies headed there now are only a few weeks old. They'll spend months clustered on fir trees in Mexico for warmth. Then this group of monarchs will begin to migrate north next spring, but they won't make it all the way back. Their offspring and the generations that follow will complete the trip. The butterflies that migrate to Mexico next year will be the great-great-grandchildren of those that are flying there now. Though the migrating monarchs have never traveled that route, they will find their way to the same forests that past generations did. Exactly how the butterflies know where to go is a mystery to scientists. We don't understand how they have a map in their head, Oberhauser explains. Troubled times. But this amazing migration may not happen for much longer. Scientists estimate that more than 360 million monarchs spent the winter in Mexico in 1996. Last year, that number was about 18 million. One reason for the decline is habitat loss. To make way for homes and farmland, people have cut down many of the trees where monarchs spend their winters. But the biggest threat is the disappearance of a plant called milkweed. It's the only plant on which monarchs lay their eggs. And monarch caterpillars eat only milkweed leaves. Some farmers and homeowners spray herbicides to kill weeds. The chemicals have wiped out millions of acres of milkweed. Hotter, drier weather brought on by climate change has also hurt the plant. Hope for the future. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is considering adding monarchs to the endangered species list. If that happens, the butterflies' habitats would be protected by the government. For now, wildlife groups are replanting trees and working to prevent monarch habitats from being damaged further. They also encourage people who live along migration paths to plant milkweed. Everybody can help, says Oberhauser. A monarch habitat can be as small as someone's tiny garden in their backyard. U.S. History. Uniting the Colonies. Word to know. Delegates. Noun, plural. People who represent others at a meeting. On September 5, 1774, a group of men gathered in secret in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This was no ordinary meeting. It was an important step toward America's independence. At the time, many people in the 13 colonies were tired of being ruled by Great Britain. The American colonists had no say in how they were governed and were being forced to follow a series of harsh laws. The 56 delegates had come to Philadelphia from across the colonies to talk about how to unite against the British. Future presidents George Washington and John Adams were among the group. That secret meeting 250 years ago is known as the First Continental Congress. At that First Continental Congress, Samuel Adams of Massachusetts was one of the biggest supporters of declaring independence. This is the beginning of the 13 colonies becoming the 13 states, says Brian Krisch of the National Constitution Center. It was the beginning of a process. No turning back. The meeting lasted for nearly 2 months. Finally, the delegates decided on a plan. They created a document that outlined colonists' rights and their objections to British rule. But the British wouldn't budge. In April 1775, the first shots of the American Revolution, 1775 to 1783, rang out. It would be 8 years before America officially won its independence. The First Continental Congress set the stage for future meetings that would help turn 13 separate colonies into one united country. Later groups of delegates came together in Philadelphia to create America's founding documents. It's important to see that this was people learning to work together as a country for the first time, Krish says. Words to live by. Declaration of Independence, created by the Second Continental Congress. Date adopted, July 4, 1776. The declaration announced that the 13 colonies were free from British rule. It also stated the ideals of the new nation, including the rights to, quote, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, unquote. U.S. Constitution, created by the Constitutional Convention. Date adopted, September 17, 1787. The, quote, supreme law of the land, unquote, set up the government of the newly formed nation with three equal branches. They're led by the President, Congress, and the Supreme Court. Find out more about the Constitution at sn56.scholastic.com. Debate it. Should kids get paid to do chores? For many kids, it pays to help out around the house. Taking out the trash or setting the table could be a way to earn some money. In a 2022 survey of more than 2,000 parents, 64% said they give their children an allowance, but only if the kids earn it. Many people argue that getting paid to do chores could encourage kids to help out more around the house. Others think that when kids earn their allowance, they're more likely to save their money and spend it wisely. But some parents say paying kids to do chores sends the wrong message. They think kids should help out without expecting to be rewarded. Here's what two of our readers think. Zidane Ford from Maryland says yes. Washing the dishes or cleaning up after a pet isn't much fun, but when a reward is involved, kids may do a better job and have a better attitude about helping around the house. Getting an allowance for doing chores also teaches kids the value of working hard. Plus, when we earn our own money, we can learn the importance of saving, giving, and investing. William Huffman of Illinois says no. I don't get paid to do chores, but I still pitch in when my parents ask me to. Helping out is part of being a family. Kids usually make the messes, so they should take responsibility for cleaning up. Besides, if kids were to get paid for chores, they might come to expect a reward for everything they do. That's not right. Parents don't get paid to scrub the toilet or vacuum. Kids shouldn't either. What do you think? Highlight evidence to support your opinion and then use that information to write an argument essay. You can cast your vote at sn56.scholastic.com. Want to have a say in an upcoming debate? You can have your parent or guardian fill in the form that I'm going to talk about. Then you can have them send a photo of it along with a photo of you to sn56@scholastic.com. We might contact you to take part in a future debate. So the form says, I hereby consent to Scholastic's publication in print and online of the attached photo and my child's full name and state together with their debate response. Note, we may edit students' responses for length and clarity. And then you list the student's full name, the date, student's age and grade, parent/guardian's name printed, student's home state, parent/guardian's signature, parent/guardian's phone number, and parent/guardian's email address. On the last page of this issue, there's an infographic about the Constitution All-Stars. You might want to ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to help you with the questions related to it. There are also questions related to the rest of the issue that you can ask for help with. News review, Constitution All-Stars. We celebrate Constitution Day on September 17 each year. On that date in 1787, delegates from the states signed the document that set up the U.S. government. Get to know some of those leaders. George Washington, state, Virginia. Before being elected the first U.S. president, he was the first person to sign the Constitution. Benjamin Franklin, state, Pennsylvania. At 81, he was the oldest person to sign the Constitution. He was one of only six men who also signed the Declaration of Independence. James Madison, state, Virginia. The future fourth president contributed so many ideas that he became known as the, quote, father of the Constitution, end quote. And Governor Morris, state, Pennsylvania. He wrote the document's famous first line, we the people. He also gave 173 speeches at the Constitutional Convention. That completes the September 16, 2024 edition of Scholastic News for grades 5 and 6. I'm Karen Finnegan. So long until next time.